Okay. Well, good afternoon already, and thank you very much for the invitation from the Hungarian Consortium. It's a pleasure being here in that beautiful room, as some of the presenters said already. We want to share with you an example based on our experience on bringing knowledge and science to the citizen. We were invited to show an example that we have from Brazil. And that sense, I invited my colleague, Laís Junqueira from Brazil to show it. As Professor Andrews was saying yesterday, there is a lot of confusion around fake news in his field, which is atmospheric research. And the same happens in medicine. And that happens a lot also in some of those Latin American countries where medicine is not very well known and people take conclusions from knowledge that is not the most common. So what we did in the case of Brazil, and Laís was the one dealing with the project, was using evidence-based knowledge to support the training of people saving people with illness in cervical cancer. So having said that, I'm giving the floor to Laís, and I'm going to be your clicker. So let me know.
Thank you very much. That's a very fancy clicker I got today. So good afternoon, everyone, and thank you very much first for inviting me here. As you can tell, I'm from Brazil, so I'm just gonna take the stage here and walk a little bit because that's how we talk in Brazil. We use our hands and we tend to walk a little bit. So first of all, I'd like to ask you a question. We've been talking about the Amazon for the past minute. How many of you have actually been to the Amazon jungle? Anyone? Well, I have. So today I'll share a couple of the experiences that I had in the Amazon with you so you can understand the complexity of the state of Amazonas that hosts the most part of the Amazon jungle in Brazil and what the population there is facing. So as you can see here on this slide, Amazonas is the largest state in Brazil. Not only it's the largest state, but the territory is around 17 times the territory that you have here in Hungary. So it's quite big. We have around 40 million people living there. And from those 40, the 4 million people that live there, half of them, 2 million, live in the capital called Manaus, a city. So the first time that I went to the jungle, I would say that, I went to Manaus. And the image that I had, even though I'm Brazilian, I'm from Rio. So the image that I had from Amazonas was actually the one from Anaconda, or movies from Hollywood. That's what I knew about it. So I was expecting really a wild jungle. And when I got there, to my surprise, it was actually a very well-developed city. It was just like Rio, but with better food. So on the next slide, what you can see is the size of Manaus. And that is what I call the contact of the first kind that I had with the jungle. Big city, electricity, internet, one of the major tropical institutes of the world, a lot of research, a lot of science. But then, when I was there, I was actually invited to visit a campus of the Amazonian University, one of the largest ones in Brazil, in a city called Coari. And when they invited me to go there, they said, well, it's around 360 kilometers from Manaus. For a Brazilian, that's nothing. That's 4 hours in a car. I mean, that's completely fine. And then I said, yes, I'm very excited to go to Coari. They were opening a new medical school, so they were really excited about it. The librarian really wanted me to visit the library that they had there. So I said yes, and they told me that they would pick me up at 6 a.m. in the airport, in the hotel. Okay, 6 a.m., a little early, but that's fine. And then that night, actually, I went into Google, and I tried to find a route to get there. And that was when I realized that there were no routes. Google couldn't tell me how to get there. So I saw that this time I was actually going into the jungle. So when I got there, I had my second kind of contact with the Amazon, which was a little less developed city, but they still had electricity, they still had internet, they had a medical school, they had a bar for the students, and one restaurant. So it was still quite good. When it rains, the restaurant closes, but it's still quite good. And then I decided that I need needed to know why Hollywood was portraying the Amazon as I saw in Anaconda. So I decided to go camping in the middle of the jungle with my family for 2 weeks. And then when I Googled where I went to, Google couldn't tell me the name of the place I was at. So that was the third kind that I had, the contact. Sleeping in hammocks, no electricity, only two types of phone carriers work on that part. And the tour guide, an indigenous person, was actually guiding us by the stars. No GPS, no Google Maps, no nothing. So when I went back home, I was thinking about it, and if it's so difficult to get to those places, if Google cannot even help you to get the route or the names of those places, what about healthcare? How is healthcare getting there? How are professionals making sure that those people are safe and getting good quality of care? So I started discussing that with a couple of friends that I made during those trips. And the outcome that I got from all the searches that I made, not only with them, but also with science, was this one. You can click again. And again. Yeah. So we knew what was happening with those women, with those children, cervical cancer. And of course, the first time I heard that, I said, that can't be. There's something wrong with the statistics. The first cause of female death, cervical cancer, that is caused by a preventable infection, HPV, that can't be. But when you look at the data, the Brazilian data, you actually have three times, the incidence is three times bigger than what you find in the Brazil national rate. But the good news, there are some good news on that story, is that the incidence rate on the regions of the South region, the Midwest, the Southeast, and the Northeast region, it either stabilizes the mortality rate or it decreases. So good news, right? Even though the incidence is great, people are not dying from it that much. When you look at the incidence of mortality on the North region, it's not only growing, but the tendency is to grow even more. So that's when we realized that we had to understand the situation, not only from a numbers perspective, but we had to talk to the experts. And that's what we did. So next slide, please. We went to the Federal University, and we had a meeting with government staff. We had clinicians, we had librarians, we had the core people that were involved on the initiatives to eradicate cancer, cervical cancer in Amazonas. And the challenges that we realized that we had were this. First of all, we had a huge variety of initiatives. So people were aware of the challenge and they were trying to tackle it. But together with this huge variety of initiatives, what we saw is that sometimes the efforts were not coordinated. So you had different information getting to people, and you also have different efforts happening. In addition to that, one thing that the clinicians really mentioned was the variability of knowledge. So you had different clinicians with different backgrounds that had different knowledge. And some of them, for example, did not know precisely how to diagnose a precancerous lesion. And that led, actually, to the fourth cause, which is the healthcare system rupture. So usually on a healthcare in Brazil, the system, you have primary, secondary, and tertiary care. What was happening in the Amazon is that primary and secondary care were just failing. So all those prevention initiatives, all the early detection, early diagnosis, were now going to tertiary care, which, as you can imagine now, caused huge lines at the hospital. What was happening is that when you have an operation room that is being used to remove a precancerous lesion, the woman that actually needs a complex surgery related to her cervical cancer dies on the line before she gets there. So what we were seeing is that this whole rupture was causing more deaths and a greater incidence. So we all sat down and discussed, how can we change this? How can we make sure that we support the government and we support those clinicians and everyone involved in it so we can get better care and we can prevent it from happening? So the approach that we had was actually based on three pillars. First one, prevention. We had to make sure that we could prevent the majority of cases that were caused by HPV. Get to those kids before they would contract HPV. Second one was to detect it early. So in case of precancerous lesions, we would be able to detect it before we had actually tertiary care needs. But of course, for those patients who actually need a treatment, we would have not only correct treatment, but timely treatment. So they wouldn't have to wait online. What we realized together is that a key point that we all needed was information. So we could base, as Eugenio mentioned before, evidence-based information, so we can work based on science. And this is exactly what we did. So on the first pillar of prevention, we worked together with the government on planning it. Three main pillars within that one. So the first one was actually to engage the patients. There is an HPV vaccine, as you were aware of. As I was discussing last night with the doctor, why were they not taking the HPV vaccine? Why were the kids not vaccinated? We have a lot of cultural barriers, especially on that region. Parents would think that their children would initiate their sexual life if they got an HPV vaccine. This is lack of patient education. So we realized that we really had to focus on making sure that the patients understand, the parents understand, why is that vaccine important? But close to the patients, of course, we also have the government and people who make the decisions. So we have to base all the decisions, including implementation and why should the government sponsor vaccine, for instance, on science, again. And last but not least, we had to educate the future healthcare professionals. You know that change comes with culture. That's the best way of changing and the most complicated one. So if we could reach all those professionals that would that were still studying and would be professionals in the future, we would be able to embed cervical cancer eradication and HPV vaccination into the culture. But of course, we also had early detection, right? In case of precancerous lesions, for example. We had to empower those professionals to be able to detect those infections. We also had to empower them to diagnose the precancerous lesions, as I mentioned to you. And of course, again, comes patient education, recognizing why you should go to the doctor, when, what's the treatment. And then, of course, we had the third pillar, which is treatment. How can we make sure that those patients who need tertiary care are getting the right care? By empowering the professionals so they can make the right decisions about those patient care. We also realized that we had to standardize protocols, so not only we could have one great hospital doing a great job, but I just told you, we have a huge territory, the largest one in Brazil. We have to make sure that all the professionals there have the same access to the same information, to the same protocols, so those patients can get the same quality of care. And of course, we had to educate patients on cervical cancer treatment. It's not an easy treatment. I actually have a friend who just finished her last cycle of chemotherapy in London. And it's tough. It is tough. And patient education is one of the pillars of making sure that not only you have great health after the treatment, but you can also conserve some of your mental health. So the approach that we had for prevention, early detection, and timely correct treatment had one basis, which was empowering professionals with the information. We had to make sure that we were empowering these people. Now, we didn't stop there. What we did actually, and this is the first time I'm saying this officially, so it's very nice to be here saying this in this very beautiful room. We are now a content provider for the Latin America Initiative on Eradication of Cervical Cancer. The seed that we planted in the Amazon is now creating this huge tree that is a project of the Latin America, the National Network for Institutes of Cancer, that is also supported by the Pan American Health Organization. So what we realized is that the challenges are huge, as I mentioned to you. I just told you a quick story that obviously just scratches the surface of the huge complex situation that you have in the Amazon. But one thing that we realized is that people need information. Now, can one organization or one entity of the government or one hospital or one clinician do it alone? We saw that that's not possible. That's what we saw in the Amazon. So I think the message from all this is actually that we have to work together to be able to bring knowledge to citizens. And that's our mission today. It's to work together to change the future. Thank you very much.